Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
Tonight is part two to my preacher husband gave me HIV. But before I do that, I want to tell everyone that we are broadcasting live in 40 countries around the world. If you would like to talk to the guests, dial 347-945-6003 and hit the 1 key. If not, you'll stay muted. But I'm going to say hi to my co-host, Chris, first before I introduce my guest. How you doing, Chris?
Hello, Terry. Happy Friday. How are you?
Good, good. I'm looking forward to Monday, Juneteenth. Yes,
it's a
holiday. Yes, a financial institution. So if y'all need some money, you better get it out this weekend. And, you know, our guest last week is a strong woman of God. She had opened up about some personal facts. And just to recap last week, she was talking about how she was married to a minister, how her husband gave her HIV, how her husband got someone else pregnant, how her husband moved and he was doing drugs, and how her husband was found dead in a studio motel. That's just to sum it up. But God is good, because anybody else would have caved, would have gave up, probably committed suicide, because that was a lot on her plate. And I thank God that she is a survivor. So today, this woman of God, she is going to talk about her ministry, her book, and how she was able to keep her head above water. I know it had to be God all by himself, but I'm going to let her tell it in her own words. How you doing, Darlene?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for again inviting me to your show. I truly appreciate it.
Anytime, baby. We love you.
Praise God. But you said it. That's how I look at myself. Only by the grace of God am I still here. Because you could not have told me in 1991, which is when I got my letter from the Red Cross telling me I can no longer donate blood, you cannot have told me that I would still be here 32 years later. I'm just in awe of God and his blessings and his grace and his mercy that he's bestowed on my family.
I know, I probably would have cracked. I probably couldn't handle that, because you're talking about getting HIV back in a time where people on TV, celebrities, everybody was dying. You know, people
in bathhouses
were dying. People died from sharing needles. People just died that you didn't think would die, like these wealthy people who got money. You know, and all of a sudden, Rock Hudson and all them, they just fade. Now, you know, I don't know if Queen was died that year or not, but it was a lot of people dying. But you only heard about, you know, the celebrities, because they were supposed to get it, so let you know that disease don't discriminate. Anybody can get it. So you are definitely a blessing to still be here. And I'm glad that God brought you through it, because Lord knows you're a better woman than I am. I just say that.
Jesus.
All the women.
It's only by his grace. Only by his grace. But you can believe there were some times, Terry and Chris, when I did crack. I mean, I've gone through depression for years.
Right.
And there, you know, it got to a point at one point when I had first left. I left in September 5th, 2003, the day that will live in infamy. I just can't forget it. And my memory is so bad, but there are just certain things, like the painful things that I seem to not be able to forget. But since then, I got sick in 2004, and I was hospitalized with this infection, and everything was crashing. My heart rhythm was off. My kidneys function was low. My liver function was low. They couldn't figure out what they knew. I had an infection, but they didn't know what kind of infection was attacking my body. And we know HIV basically attacks your immune system, so your immunity is so low that you catch everything. But I was in the hospital for about, I think, about like a week and a half. But in those days, when that hospital stay, you could not have told me that was it. They basically called what was happening to me wasting, which is what happens to some people with HIV when they get sick. All the organs and everything start to shut down, and they called it wasting. So they thought that's what was happening to me. And I believe that was what was happening to me, but only God brought me back, you know, from that to heal me, to be able to be, of course, strengthened to the point where I could leave the hospital. But during that day, I was so depressed, because the only thing in my mind was, you finally had the courage to get up and leave him, and now you're going to die. That's all that was in my head the whole time that I was in the hospital. So every time I got over the years a really serious illness or infection, I always believed that's it. This is it. You know, it's done. I'm done for. So in 2004, I thought I was done for. Over the years, so many times I've gotten sick and been down, I thought I was done for. And I just, and when I think, when I start thinking like that, I sink immediately into depression. And only God, you know, has continued to strengthen me and pull you out. But all the days haven't been like these wonderful, happy days. All there have just been so many ups and so many downs.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I'm grateful that you're still here, and I'm grateful for the work that you do in the community. What gave you the strength to verbally own up to the people around you? Because some of the work you do is mentoring people who have this, you know, young people and other people you go around speaking. What gave you the strength to own it? Because you know how people are always talking about you. Oh, girl. You know how people are nasty and mean for it. What gave you the strength to just own it outwardly?
Only God really gave me the strength. In the beginning, even when I was with my husband, I used to say to him, we could do so much good because HIV, you know, in the 90s was just running rampant in our communities. And
right.
I used to say to him, you know, we could really do a lot speaking and telling people and speaking and talking as a couple and sharing our status so people will know, like encouraging people to get tested. Here's what you can do. There's medication out there. I always, from the moment that I finally could get myself out of depression, I always felt like you could be a voice and help people. Because also in the 90s, what was happening was churches were not treating people very well at all. You know, churches were really knocking people, and there were many churches that felt like if you contracted HIV, it was a curse from God, that you will be cursed by God, and therefore they want nothing to do with you. They don't want you in their churches. They don't want you touching their members. They don't want you using their utensils. Of course, today we're educated, and we know you can't get HIV from utensils. You can't get it by holding someone's hand in prayer, you know. So I always felt like if Christians and churches and ministers could go out and speak, it would encourage people to, one, know there are churches and Christians that love me and not are going to judge me because of this virus, but going to receive me and accept me and love me and pray for me. And that's just been my mindset from the beginning when I was finally out of the funk that I was in of feeling sorry for myself is, how can I help others? And that's what I've done since the beginning is, been open with people and honest with people and talk to people. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, you know. People think that when they see the title that it's a man-bashing, preacher-bashing book, which is one of the reasons why I'm changing the title, but it isn't. It's really a journey in my shoes and how God delivered me and set me free and how if you're a person living with this virus, he can do the same for you. And that's my goal is to let people know they can live.
Yeah, real quick, Darlene, Chris, I think maybe too close to the mic because I hear somebody breathing, but I want to say, Darlene, I remember the time when people would be afraid to be around people with HIV because if they come over for Thanksgiving, oh, God, I can't come because I don't want to get the wrong fork or the wrong knife. I remember how that was prevalent, you know, and that's so sad, but you know, I want to make sure that let people know that they got a drug now that if you take it for HIV, that you won't even be detectable when they test you and you won't infect any future partners, you know. So that's a help. But I advise anyone who has it, whether they take their medicine or not, and you can't tell that they got it, please be honest with your partners because, you know, you don't have the right to give somebody something, you know, that they didn't sign up for. And I'm just saying that. And on that note, I'm going to let Chris ask this question.
Okay, Darlene, my first question to you is, you talked about how writing the book has helped you. Was it easy to finish it, or was it hard? Like, is there more to the story, or do you feel you completed it with this book?
I it was hard in the beginning because it was so personal to me. And it actually extended, the book became about because of a journal. So when I was seeing the psychiatrist and the therapist, one of the things she said, begin to journal and write it down. And I began to do that. And as I began journaling, I realized that a lot of the things I'm saying and feeling, there are others living with this virus that are saying and feeling the same thing, but they feel like they have no outlet, no one to talk to. So I just felt that when I was writing it, it was very cathartic because it felt like I was placing the pain on the pages. It's like I'm writing it, and now that I've written it down, it's no longer a pain that's attached to me. It's now on these pages, and I'm fine. And so that's why it was so cathartic more than it was hard of just placing the pain on the pages. And that's where they remain, on the pages, and not just constant pain in my heart.
Well, we know you're a mother, and you got children and a grandbaby. So
yes.
They weren't infected with that disease, were they, or you had it after they was born?
They were not, praise God, infected with the virus. So at the time when I was diagnosed, my youngest daughter was 9 months old. My oldest daughter was 5 years old. And when I went to the doctor, once I got the letter, of course, I immediately went to the doctor and took the kids to the pediatrician. And he had them tested. The test came up negative. But he continued to test them every 6 months for about a year or two. I would have to take them back. He would draw blood, test them, and continue to test them. After a couple of years, he said they no longer needed to be tested. But as they got older, they got themselves tested again. It's free testing. Everywhere you go, there is some place that will give you free testing. But I thank God that they did not test positive. And that, because I think that would have killed me even more to know that in my actions, I've also affected them. But
right.
I am just so thankful because those girls are the reason why I'm here, because when I was depressed, I was so close on the edge to just killing myself and taking myself out. And the only thing
imagine.
That would stop me was knowing that I couldn't do that to these two girls. I couldn't do that to my mother, and I couldn't do that to these children. But it was hard, you know, pulling yourself out so many times of depression because I lost everything, you know. And I just felt like attaching myself to this individual made me lose so much. You know, lose my health, lose my home, lose my job, lose my 401k, lose my pension. It's just everywhere you turned, there was just loss as a result of all the things that he did. And so by then, by 2004, I was a goner. You couldn't have told me that I wasn't out of here. I mean, between the depression and the hospital stays, I was 2004. I was probably in and out of the hospital at least 4 or 5 times that year. It was a hard year. And you wouldn't believe it, but just this last year, in October, end of October of 22, I had a knee surgery. And the knee surgery went well. I came home. I was fine. I was walking. It was a torn meniscus. And then about 5 days after, I woke up with my body stiff. I couldn't move my neck. I couldn't move my shoulders. And when I did, it was just excruciating pain and spasms just going through my back with every movement that I made. I ended up in the hospital again, and they didn't know what it was. But by the time I left the hospital, I could no longer walk. And I'm like, I cannot believe I walked in here, and I can't walk out. So I wasn't able to walk in November of 2022. I ended up having to go home care at my daughter's house. I had physical therapists, occupational therapists, and nursing trying to teach me how to walk again. And I really felt like, this is it. I'm no longer going to be able to walk, but only by the grace of God, I am walking. Now, I walk with a walker, but I am walking, you know. And sometimes short distances, I don't need my walker, but if it's a long distance, I do need my walker. But I'm walking. I didn't think I was going to be able to walk by the time 2022 ended, and I was having to be in this intense physical therapy. And they still don't even know. They know, they throw again, like it was some kind of infection and that something got in my body. But they said it had absolutely nothing to do with the knee surgery. They said my knee surgery was fine. It went well. All the tests and everything on my knee was wonderful. But my body just went on me. And thank God I'm up, I'm talking, I'm walking. And but
please,
it was horrible. Yes. So we just don't know. We just don't know what's going to be thrown our way. But life has shown me that anything can be thrown our way at any time but God.
Absolutely.
You just have to trust him, and he's going to carry
right
us through, and he's going to pull us out.
So, Darlene, tell us about your ministry and the title of your book as well, because we don't want time to run out like it did last time. I want to hear some more about your ministry and your book.
my church is, this, as we said last week, Discipleship of Christ Community Fellowship Church. It's a small church. We were located in Claymont, Delaware. And my ministry is basically just, I go different places and I speak and I talk. I try to go to high schools, talk to teenagers, talk to young adults, talk to anyone. If you invite me to come speak to your youth about HIV, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And sometimes I don't even charge people to come because I just think it's that important of an issue for our young people to just be so aware that not only HIV, but all of the sexually transmitted diseases that they can contract. And so every chance I get to talk to young people, I'm there. I'm available. And I try to go wherever people ask me to go. For my and one of the agencies I'm with, Action Wellness, which is an it started as an AIDS agency in Philadelphia, but now they deal with chronic illnesses, so not just HIV, but all different types of chronic illnesses. I'm a volunteer there. I volunteer to speak sometimes for a group in Philadelphia called Philadelphia Fight, and I also volunteer with a group in Philadelphia called Philawam Wellness. So, and like I said, I go and speak, you know, wherever I'm invited to go speak at. Our church, though, is a small church in we were located in Claymont, Delaware, but I'm still a member, have been a member since 2003 when I left my husband. So what happened with our church was it was a group of us. Once all the things came out about my husband and the things that he was doing, we had an associate pastor who was also serving at the time, Pastor Hutchison. And my husband called Pastor Hutchison to the house. This is when we had the big blow-up fight when he kicked me. And then my family, of course, all came from Philly because I was in Delaware.
Did you say he kicked you?
Yes. So when we got... No, we got into a big argument, and he kicked me while we were arguing.
What?
And so we're in this heated argument with each other, and I'm, of course, saying things to hurt him. He's, of course, saying things to hurt me, and that's when he told me I'm married beneath me. And as we're arguing back and forth, I'm standing over him, and he just reaches his foot up and kicked me away from the bed. And with that moment, That argument was what clearly opened my eyes as to the kind of person that I thought I had as a spouse, but I really didn't have as a spouse. I thought
right.
I had a partner in this HIV fight, but I did not have a partner in this HIV fight. And I realized that not only did I have a partner, I didn't have a husband. I didn't have anybody that truly loved me. I believe that my husband was angry at women. I believe that a woman gave it to him, and he was determined to give it to as many people as he can before he left here. And he didn't care about women. He didn't care about me. He didn't care about his mother.
Yeah.
Women were just
his
vehicle. Yeah, to use for what he had. So he called Pastor Hutchison over to the house. We told Pastor Hutchison everything that was going on. And he asked Pastor Hutchison if he would take over as pastor of the church. And Pastor Hutchison said, yes, he would, but the members would have to vote on it. And he said he would present it to the members. So that Sunday, Pastor Hutchison was kind enough to try to keep our personal issues out of, you know, the conversation. And he
right.
just said to the people that Pastor George was ill. And so he said he asked them to take over, but as a church, we have to vote. Everyone voted and everyone agreed. Yes, they wanted Pastor Hutchison to take over. So in doing that, Pastor Hutchison then announced that they were changing the name of the church to Discipleship of Christ, that they were no longer would your tithes be submitted to the old name, but that everyone was supposed to, they had to wait. He said, hold your tithes until we establish a new bank account, and once we establish a new bank account, then you will be able to continue to tithe and check. And so when he announced that, and at this particular service, my oldest stepson was there, and my mother-in-law was there at the service. Me and the girls, we were not there. And when they came home and told him what Pastor Hutchison said, he was angry because he thought this money was going to continue to come into this account, and Pastor Hutchison was going to be this puppet, but yet he was going to still be able to collect his money and do what he's been doing, which you don't know what he's been doing because he's the only one in control. And so when he found that out, he then gets on the phone, calls all the members saying, Pastor Hutchison is not taking over, and he went off, got on the phone, called all these people. So now everybody's like, what in the world is going on? You know, what is happening? So all my friends, of course, I'm calling my friends are calling me, and I'm calling them, and I'm saying, you know, I'm telling them the truth about what he's been doing. And some of my friends, they already knew. As far as my status, they already knew because a couple of my friends came from the old church where I came from. So as far as my HIV status, a lot of my friends had already talked about that. But him now cheating with some of the members in the church in Delaware and not telling them that he's HIV positive, you know, they didn't know that. But so now the cheating, the drugs and everything, the hookers and everything that's going on, now that all that came out, the people were like, no, we don't want nothing to do with George. So then he went to we used to have services in the school. So he went to the school principal and said, they are no longer, that we, meaning the new church, would not be able to come there. So the principal had to tell us, Pastor Hutchison, that we can't have services anymore because the lease is in George's name. He's the one who rented the church, and he said, we cannot come there. So let me show you how good God is. And it was nothing but God that sent Pastor Hutchison our way, the best thing that could have ever happened to us. So one of the members has opened up her home, and for like 2 weeks we had services in home. Maybe about a month. It might have been about three to four weeks. But Pastor Hutchison and Deacon Bo was out in Claymont searching for places, and they came across this building that a church was moving out of. So they just went just to talk to the landlord just to see what the facility looked like, which is where we ended up, of course. And it was a church that was previously there, so it was already set up with a church, with a pulpit, the chairs, the furniture, everything. And the pastor just happened to be there when they came with the landlord, and he told them that we could rent the building, and they could also have all the furniture as it was in the building, already set up as a church. You know that's nothing but God. And that's where we moved into in 2003, and we were there until COVID. You know, when COVID came about, the new people who owned the building decided they wanted to sell it. So they sold it during COVID. Well, but we were already having services on Facebook because of COVID. So when they sold it, it wasn't like a big transition because we weren't able to go into the building anyway. So we've been online.
Darling, I hate to interrupt. We're down to 60 seconds now on the time clock. Real quick, can you tell people how to get a hold of you so you can continue your story? Because I don't know, we might need a part three, but for right now, we're running out of time.
Well, my name on just about everything, on Twitter, I'm at DarleneKing13. Facebook, I'm at DarleneKing13. On Instagram, I'm at DarleneKing133. 13 wasn't available, and I'll tell you later the story of the 13th. And it's Darlene King. You can also email me at DarleneKing13@gmail.com and DarleneKing13@hotmail.com. So
of this woman, because this woman is inspirational, encouraging, and she's definitely a woman of God, and she's been through some stuff that you couldn't even imagine going through. We want to thank her for spending the time tonight with us, because we ran out of time, and I don't know about in the future whether we have to get her back for part three. But I love you, darling. I appreciate you. And
I thank you guys for
me
having
me. About this 13.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very quick and easy story. When I first joined Twitter, everything that I wanted was already taken. And the only thing that was available is 13, because I guess everybody's superstitious about 13. And I'm like, 13 ain't nothing but a number. You can give me 13. I'm fine with 13. And 13 means absolutely nothing. So that's how I ended up with 13, and then just made sure that I made everything the same exact thing.
Sweetheart, you keep on spreading gospel seeds and doing what you do, because
thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Your family, you can always come back. Just call me, take care. I'm going to talk about this or this and that. And
yes, the new book, the new title is going to be Uncovered. So when it comes out, I will certainly call you. I would love to come back and talk about the new book. And the additions to the book are going to be free for anyone who purchased the book and they just want the updates. I'm going to make updates available via email for free to anyone who wants it, if you previously had the book. Because I just feel personally that, it's the right thing to do. I wouldn't want somebody to buy a book and say, this is the same book I already bought. Why am I going to pay again for this book? I don't want you to pay again. I want you to have the updates. But if you'd like a new printed book signed by me, absolutely, that's available to you too. But the updates will be free.
Yeah, well, I would like to buy a book, the new one, autographed as well. Just send me a PayPal invoice, and I'll kick it over to you.
Amen. I sure will. But the new book I'm hoping to have out in a couple months, so. Hopefully, before the end of
this
summer, we'll be ready.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all take care, and we'll see y'all again next week. Thank you, darling. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris. Y'all have a safe and blessed
week.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
You do the same.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.